Hello, and welcome to VentureCast. I'm David Hornick.
And this is Howard Hartenbaum.
And this is VentureCast July something edition, July 6th.
My younger daughter's birthday. Whoops.
Is that right? So let me understand this. It's her birthday, and you're putting her on a plane to camp.
She's going off to summer camp, and I was supposed to get her an iPod Touch before she left, but anyway.
That's what she wanted for her birthday?
Yep. She's 11.
That's a good present, but it's kind of, is that a reasonable present to get an 11-year-old?
I think it's ridiculously expensive, but it's what she wants, and I spoil my children.
Me too.
Get out myself.
It's almost my 12-year-old's birthday, and he does need a guitar amp. There's no question. Like, his guitar amp is totally fried, piece of junk. But then the question is, if you're going to get him a guitar amp, there's an okay amp, and then there's a good amp. And if you're a musician, you'd make a decision like, okay, should it be a tube amp? If it's a tube amp, then it's already too expensive.
In the medley of watching all of the Michael Jackson videos again, a couple of days ago, one of them, which I really enjoyed, was the Black or White,
mm-hmm.
where, what is it, Colleen McCaughan gets the amplifiers out and plays a little music for his dad. You should get your kid an amplifier like that.
It basically goes all
the way to the ceiling.
So do you ever get your, like, I only get my kids' technology gifts at this point. I got my 7-year-old for Hanukkah got that programmable Lego. What's that thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The robot, Lego
yeah.
robot? That thing was pretty awesome.
My kids spent the last 4 days with their grandfather learning to program robots in BASIC.
Oh, yeah? That's cool.
Like, a pretty intense course, and they were pretty excited. They could make the little lights come on, and they could make it drive and turn around and decelerate and stop, and I felt good that they weren't watching YouTube all day. Instead, they were actually, like, programming a robot. And just programming to make the screen change isn't nearly as much fun as programming to make something drive across the floor and blink and...
Well, that's and so cool. Is it the same thing? Is it the Lego thing, or is it something?
No. This is kind of this fancy... My dad bought it. But it was kind of about the size of a... half the size of a shoebox, and it's got all sorts of servos and lights and little circuit boards and all sorts of stuff. It's pretty cool.
When I learned BASIC at Stanford, they had this thing called Carol the Robot, but it was this virtual environment, and you could design, you know, super simple programming language. Like, you could program Carol to only go left. There was no right. So in order to get Carol to go right, you had to go left 3 times, you know, and it was, but it was just about making you think logically and...
Well,
cool.
I was pleased because I felt like they learned something. They were excited. It was new. They got both the mechanical side. They got the electrical side. And they weren't watching YouTube, which is all they ever want to do anyway.
It's every MIT dad's dream.
That their children learn how to program robots.
Yes. So you seem a little fixated with this YouTube thing, Howard.
I do. I'm just amazed. So when we were kids... which was a long time ago or not that long ago, depending on how you look at it. We'd come home from school and we'd, you know, drink Coca-Cola and we'd watch whatever crap was on TV. And your kids and my kids, all they want to do is go through YouTube and pick out little funny clips and show you animal clips and show you funny skateboarding accident clips, and they're perfectly happy to do that all day long.
Yep.
There's no TV anymore.
No, my kids would much rather watch YouTube. And even the things that would be on TV, or movies or TV programs, they'd rather watch on YouTube. Because it's on demand. It's like, it's this on-demand culture. Remember when we were watching TV, as you say, you'd watch what was on. And then you'd have a, like, oh, on Thursday nights is my program that I'm really excited about. Which, that's totally dead. Like, you know, first of all, so last night, my kids and I watched The Deadliest Catch. Which I just love that show. And it was an episode from 2 weeks ago, I think. And then it made reference to an earlier episode where the guy had, you know, big giant wave had knocked off the people. And so then we had to go back in our, you know, in our PVR and figure out where that one was and watch it. And it's just, it's watch what you want when you want.
So do you think it's more about when you want and what you want than the fact that there's so much more content and the content is so unpredictable? Like, my kids like animals, so they'll, like, find silly things that cats do, and they'll watch through 50 or 100 different videos, and it's, I think it's the variety more than the on-demand piece.
Well, you know, this, I think we may have talked about this before, but you, for the earliest days of YouTube, it was tracking perfectly with the growth of MySpace because it was the video delivery solution for MySpace, and that was basically all it was. And then one day they sort of woke up and they had a whole bunch of content and they created the recommendation piece, the, oh, if you like that video, you'll also like these sets of videos. And it was at that time, as I understand it, that the curves separated and YouTube started accelerating at a faster pace than MySpace, because suddenly, instead of just going to MySpace and watching videos, you'd watch a video and then you'd say, oh, I like cat videos, and here are seven other cat videos, and they keep... And I've been down this rat hole, haven't you, where you, like, watch one thing, and then you go, oh, well, that's interesting. There's
another
one. And
38 minutes later.
There's another one, yeah. I did this with the soccer, where I started watching this soccer clips, and next thing you know, I was watching, you know, literally 38 minutes was probably short of, you know, clip after clip after clip after clip.
So a lot of people, when they're shopping online, they go online and they want to buy some sunglasses. And after about 30 minutes later, they bought a pair of shoes. And yep. There's just this natural mm-hmm. progress, like you're watching soccer clips, and the next thing you know, you're watching cats. And then pretty soon, you're watching...
And then you buy one.
Then you buy something.
You buy a cat.
So it's kind of this natural progress. I saw on the news that YouTube has increased their storage per clip size to 2 gigs, and they're taking HD now.
Which is unbelievable, because that's a lot of content. Particularly if...
I would have thought they would have cut it back.
Yeah,
or right. Or said, I mean, if you want to do 2 gigs, that'll be $2.
Pay up. It doesn't look like advertising's making up the difference.
I don't think so.
So...
I'd like to advertise on YouTube, though.
What would you like to advertise?
I would like to find videos that I really like and then advertise on those good videos and send them to my crappy videos so that I could get views.
Well, that's a good business. They should do that.
How come they don't let people sponsor videos, like other people's videos, and take a cut of that?
They should. Well, they,
that's a form of self-expression, right? I like this video. So instead of liking it, you can only like it if you pay to like it.
Well, that could be, you know, brought to you by this cat singing, brought to you by Howard Hartman.
Brought to you by VentureCast.
Yeah, right, exactly.
This cat singing, brought to you by two cats fighting.
You know, I've been amazed. I've started to pay attention to the advertising on Facebook, which I originally thought was sort of stupid and never made a whole lot of sense, etc. And yet now when I look at those ads, they're pretty interesting. Like they seem to be reasonably smart contextually, you know, except that I keep getting this one that says, you know, over 40 singles, and it has this woman who's sort of
50,
arguably over 40 and hot. You know, and it's like, you should click here. That seems to be the one I get most of all. I told my wife this. She didn't seem too worried about it, frankly.
I went to Facebook's new office.
Oh, did you?
I did last week.
Over
have
on
you been
California
there?
Ave? No, how is it?
They didn't plan well for having 1,000 employees in the building and only having 400 parking spaces.
Yeah, that's a problem. Like this is California.
You have to park down the street or whatever. It was a nice office. The outside of the building kind of looks like it could use a coat of paint. It's kind of dated. But you get inside and upstairs, beautiful skylights and just, you know, nice space between the desks and lots of people. And evidently, all of the engineers and management are downstairs where it's dark. And that the engineers and the management all want to be where there's no skylights, there's no high ceilings, it's just kind of dark
and
dank.
Just the marketing and sales.
Marketing
people that
and
are
business
up there.
Development and sales, they all get the top floor, which is the level you come in at, and it's really beautiful, and they have this nice cafeteria in there. It's really nice. Just if you want to join Facebook, you should be in sales, marketing, or business development, not in management or engineering.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. So I heard that Facebook actually had to put a bunch of money into that building because it's so in the middle of nowhere that, like, they had to put better cafeterias in, and so that basically people wouldn't want to or need to leave. Was that the case? Did you see that, or was it?
They do. They have a nice cafeteria, and they have, you know, it's nothing like Google's, but they do have a nice place. They don't have enough capability to move people through there fast enough. So there's quite a line.
Yeah.
When you come in to get some food, but
I mean, you could go to California Ave, right? Do they have they have a shuttle bus to the train, and they have all that stuff.
So
right?
The California Ave side, I think, for most people would probably drive because they're on the other side of El Camino, and so it's way up the way. So I think people would drive actually down to the other side.
Yes, yeah,
so and then there's no parking on California Ave anyway down there. So
no, but Joanie's is good. I like Joanie's.
They could get like those little electric scooters. 1,000 Facebook guys on electric scooters
just like
could be
Google,
going down there.
Where you get your helmet and you... Well, have you noticed that, you know, the Google cafeterias are not quite as fantastic as they used to be?
They've gotten better again.
Have they?
I was actually
there. Did someone try and fix that?
I was there last week for lunch as well with somebody else.
Yes.
I know where all the free lunches are in town. You know, Facebooks and Googles. I just wait till the companies get their cafeterias and then I invite myself.
That's good. But meanwhile, I invite everybody to have sushi at Kaigetsu and then I end up paying. So yours is a better deal.
You end up paying part of it's my money.
Oh, good.
Even better.
Well, then keep saving it.
Yeah, David's going to have two Kaigetsu lunches soon.
Tomorrow I have two. This is actually unbelievable. I mean, I have a lunch at 12 and I have a lunch at 1. I hope my lunch at 12 is over by 1.
It will be over, but you must eat very lightly.
Yeah,
so you just
right.
I'll have 6 pieces of sushi, please, and I'll
like,
think
wow,
you're very healthy
on that
later.
What a diet. I'll six more. 7 pieces today.
Yeah, so at Google, they had this budget cutback at the end of last year. Maybe it was like just coincided with the financial meltdown, and they stopped serving food on the weekends, and some of the choices were cut back. And evidently, it's back up to par. And last week was very good, and I really enjoyed my lunch there.
That's good. Well, the other thing about Google is that they have a bunch of cafes, and some are known for better food than others, and particular cuisine or whatever. But I had lunch over there with a certain someone, and his cafeteria sucked. It was like, and he didn't really want to acknowledge that because it's a little bit of a pride thing.
Yeah, the company's been around long enough where you have people who've been there for 3, 4, 5 years who've, you know, they like the company and they like their job. They're just kind of interested in doing something new.
This is Google or Facebook?
In Google, yeah.
They're going to, when
Facebook,
you say that, they're going to stop letting you come over. They're going to be like, oh, here comes Howard. He's just trolling for people to start companies.
No, I'm just having lunch with my friends, and some of them say, yeah, I have this really neat idea.
Well, when Google first went public, I had every intention of setting up the, you know, the VC is in booth, and people could come give me their resumes and their business plans, and you know, we should do that. I mean, as a service, we just want to be helpful. Do you think
the Charlie Brown, the doctor?
Yeah, exactly. The VC is in, right?
If we do it on their campus, they'll probably tear us off.
Well, I figured out where you can do it because there's a park right next to their campus. It's a public park that literally is right next to it.
Is that where they have the goats that are chewing the grass?
I think so, yes.
I went there. I looked for the goats. I couldn't find them.
No? I discovered, you know what they use to chew the grass in Machu Picchu?
No, what do they use to chew the grass in Machu Picchu?
Well, it's actually not that hard to figure out. They use llamas.
Did you eat any llamas while you were there?
I ate alpaca.
Oh, sorry.
It is llama, basically. I'm sure there's some distinction between llama and alpaca, but...
There's only one reason why I hate YouTube is because this song on there called I'm a Llama.
I'm a llama, 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 llama,
llama. Oh, I hate that llama song. My kids play that. It's insane.
Llama, llama, duck. Over and over and over.
Yeah. So you know what I'm talking about.
I do. Cheesecake, something, something. Llama, 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 llama. So what are they going to do? I mean, so I think I've passed on this fact before in VentureCast, but it is now... The largest search URL in the world is google.com. The second largest search URL in the world is youtube.com. There's more search traffic on YouTube than there is on Yahoo Search or Bing. And so it's
obviously... I like Bing, though.
You do?
I do. I like...
You've been checking it out?
I do. I like the picture every day, and I like that you can mouse over and learn little things and just kind of looks fresh and new. I mean... I'm a Googler, but every now and then I try out Bing, and I don't feel dirty for doing so.
Is that right? Even though you like the pictures.
I like the pictures. I think it's nice.
What do you think of the results?
I don't notice all that big a difference. I don't use all the features that they have. I just kind of type in and look for the results that come up, and they seem perfectly fine to me, but I like the pictures.
And it speaks to the fact that basically search is search. Like at this point, the idea that you're differentiate on decidedly better search results is not between Yahoo and Google and Bing and Ask. It's not even... There's no real distinction.
We've seen lots of interesting search-related companies come in and show us, and each one has a little slightly different twist to what to do, but pretty hard to pick out which one would be more successful than Google.
But man, if you figure it out, We're definitely interested. Keep coming. We definitely are believers, but it is tough.
I want to go back to your Machu Picchu statement.
Machu Picchu, yes.
You showed me this really cool video of Machu Picchu on your iPhone.
That is true. So I should defend myself. I'm not, like, just flying off to Machu Picchu because I'm one of these VCs who are like, hey, let's go on an adventure trip to Machu Picchu. My son was doing this service trip thing, and I literally had to deliver him to Peru. So I took one extra day, and I went to Machu Picchu. So I'm not like just...
And I saw the video, and it looked nice.
It was good, isn't it?
You were wearing a Vark t-shirt.
I did. I wore a Vark t-shirt to the top. So this is the thing. So have you seen this? If you go to Aardvark's Google page, they have a page where you can put a picture of yourself up in a Vark shirt. So I said, all right, I'm going to be a good board member, and I'm going to bring my Vark shirt, and when I go to Machu Picchu, I'll take a picture at the top, and that'll be awesome. And apparently threw down the gauntlet, because a number of people commented. There was a woman in Africa who has her Varkini. Apparently there are Aardvark bikinis, and she intends to
That's called good use of venture capital. We fund a company and they buy Varkinis.
I think this is brilliant. I gotta tell you, I've always been a big believer in swag. I think it's important to keep the team engaged and motivated. I like the power of brand. I want people to be engaged, and so I'm you know, within reason. I don't want the Aardvark tuxedo or whatever, but I mean, you know, I'm a big believer in the company t-shirts. Don't you think that every one of your companies should have company t-shirts that the...
Because then we never have to go shopping for t-shirts ever again.
God, no. We clearly don't. All you have to do is be around Peter Pham long enough and
I was just thinking, Peter. David had a pizza fest here for some people he'd done some work with. And Peter Pham comes along and he had, what, like 80 t-shirts over his shoulder? He was walking around handing them out to everybody, and I don't know, he had a trunk that big on his car to carry all those
t-shirts. It's clearly full, and you could pick which variety you wanted. So it will be nice and say BillShrink.com,
it's a great company.
Peter's the CEO of BillShrink. But, you know, if you ever see him, he's in a BillShrink t-shirt, just as Max Ventilla is always in a Vark t-shirt. I mean, I'm a believer in this. So... anyway, yeah, so I wore my Aardvark t-shirt, I went to the top of Machu Picchu, and then I have the new iPhone, and the new iPhone has video on it, and so I took, instead of just taking a picture of Machu Picchu, which is great, like it's pretty amazing, and I took some great pictures with the new camera on the iPhone, but then I took a video that swept around from sort of left to right so that you could see the scale of Machu Picchu, and it was awesome.
And I'm looking at your phone, and I was having phone envy because I have one of those older 3G iPhones, and I want a new one now. How much does that thing cost you?
That is sad. I don't know. I think it was $299.
And you had to sign up for 2 more years or something? What'd you do with your other phone?
You know, it's like it
sold it on eBay.
Gets passed down to the next generation of Hornick. So some smaller Hornick now has my 3G, and I have the 3G whatever.
That video was so good on your phone. I wonder what's going to happen to the Flip.
It is an interesting question. Flip may have, Pure Digital may have done just the right thing and sold at just the right time, because if great video can be had on the iPhone and then obviously other platforms soon enough, that's a big problem, right?
I mean, I have an HD Flip, and I frankly love it. I think it's a great product, but I hardly ever use it because it's never with me. And if your phone is always with you when you want it, that's the whole thing. So I would say, you know, I'm going to get the new iPhone with video, and I'm going to sell my Flip on eBay. Oh well.
Oh. All right, you heard it here. I have my Flip HD, and I agree. It's awesome.
Do you ever use it?
And occasionally, I'd like to bring it to kid events. And I don't know that the iPhone will replace that, but... you know, but I do think it puts a lot of pressure on it, because it is this great device. It's easy to sync, etc. And now the iPhone is clearly that, right? You just plug it in, and boom, it uploads to iPhoto, and so it's an interesting thing. Have you at least upgraded the software on your iPhone?
Nope.
You need to. It is awesome. No, I cannot understate the degree to which the new iPhone software is spectacular.
Okay, I will do it this afternoon. Thank you for the recommendation.
No, seriously. Because here's the biggest problem that the iPhone had, that all of these things have, which is that the search is terrible. Search on your email. Search, just eat it, Howard. Howard keeps like picking up the $3 here.
I have candy on the counter, and like it's staring at me.
But he doesn't want to make noise with the wrapper. But just make the noise. Seriously, Howard, don't let us get in the way of your sugar high.
Mm.
But anyway, the search, the new search, the 3.0 software search, is so good. It's so fast. It searches everything on your phone, including the content of your mail, that it alone, you know, it was worth hundreds of dollars to pay for that software upgrade, and yet it was for free. And frankly, the difference between the 3G and the 3GS with the new software is not huge, except for video and a compass.
I will do it today, and then I will go and buy the video on the way home.
Right, exactly.
I wasn't going to do it, because after I saw your video, I wanted one of those things. So
yeah, no, that's fair.
But I'm going to sell mine on eBay.
How much can you get for it?
I better get a few hundred. I don't want to give it to my kids, because then I have to pay that extra $30 a month.
Yeah.
Per kid.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of money.
It adds up. I bet you I'm paying hundreds of dollars to AT&T a month now, between my wife and my kids and... It's just crazy.
I mean, if you think of it, if you're paying $200 a month and you're paying 50% tax bracket, that's $5,000-$6,000 a year.
Wow.
That's a lot of money.
Well,
I guess what we need is communication, food, and entertainment.
That's it. That's all we need. So the same week that I bought the new iPhone, I bought a Palm Pre. Because in my one pocket right now I have a Trio, in the other pocket I have the iPhone. I think that the iPhone is a great media device. I think it's got the best browser. I think it has the best handling for photos, etc. But it has no keyboard, and I don't like it as an email device. And so I thought, okay, maybe the Palm Pre will solve this problem. And so I went and I bought a Pre, and I returned it 3 days later.
Hmm.
So that's not good. And I returned it for two reasons. One, just sitting in my pocket. I did nothing. I didn't drop it. I didn't do anything. Just sitting in my pocket, the corner of my phone broke. And it's the way the thing's designed. If when you pull out the keyboard, then the tolerances on the screen itself go to this quite small kind of point. And it's just not, it's not well manufactured. It's not well made. And I think that they're going to have big problems with kind of the build. So that was problem number one. Problem number two is it's not a very good email device. Like the keyboard's okay, and the email integration is okay, but they fail in a lot of simple little things. Like when you read an email and then you delete it, it doesn't bring up the next email. It takes you back to the inbox. What is that? Are you kidding me? Like, how efficient is that? It would take me all of 280 to read through my email. So,
do you have any idea what percentage of people carry two active mobile devices at the same time? I mean, I see a lot of people who
carry... Sandhill Road, we see it a lot. Or Silicon
Valley. I don't. I think one is enough. But you carry two. I see a lot of people carrying two. Does anybody have an idea what percentage that is?
I don't know. But I'd say, first of all, it's way bigger here than in most places. But it's an incredible indictment of these devices that any of us is carrying more than one.
Hmm.
But I am.
I bought one of those MacBook Airs a couple weeks ago.
Yeah,
I took it with me.
Oh, you went to Japan.
I went to Japan on a business trip, which I did have fun on my business trip, but it was still a business trip nevertheless.
You had like 73 meetings in a week or something.
Yeah, it was really exhausting. I met with one of my companies that we invested in called Swoopo is looking at Japan, and I met with a bunch of potential partners, with a bunch of lawyers, with a bunch of people who we might want to hire. Plus, I met with a bunch of e-commerce companies. I met with a bunch of investors. I met with Google and YouTube and NetPrice and Rakuten and Excite, and just a lot of really interesting people. And every meeting was in somebody else's office. And Tokyo is a big city, and there was taxis or trains between everyone, and it was hot and humid, and I was wearing a suit. And so, you know, each evening when I came, well, most couple of evenings I went out to dinner until about 10, but I was just totally exhausted when I came back. But luckily, my new MacBook Air was waiting there for me. And I would just open it up, and it didn't make any noise, and it just
so
came
with
to life.
Solid state drive.
Got
SSD.
The solid state drive, and it would just come up, and
instantly.
There was no waiting, and it was just a wonderful device. And the keyboard is backlit, so I could type in the dark, and it was just, it was wonderful. And you know, when you're jet lagged and you're up in the middle of the night, and you don't want all the room lights on to completely wake you up. You just want to stare into your screen. It was really wonderful.
So you're a believer.
I like the MacBook Air.
Your new traveling computer?
I like it. I was just bringing my iPhone with me, but this was so nice and it was so light that I think I'm going to bring it with me everywhere.
So I have a MacBook Air, and I liked it, and I was traveling with it. But then I found that because it only has one USB port, and you have to get everything as a peripheral, so if you want to, you know, like you need a disk drive as a peripheral, etc., that... It doesn't you know, you have to remember if you want to hook up to the network without wireless, you need a peripheral, etc., that it sort of made me crazy after a while. So now I travel with a MacBook Pro.
Well, I hate the movie industry because I wanted to load a bunch of movies onto the hard drive so I could watch them on the plane.
And that you had legitimately bought or rented?
Legitimately rented. These were Netflix movies, and I simply wanted to transfer them onto the hard drive so I didn't have to bring the external drive with me on the plane. It wouldn't use as much power in doing it, and I simply wanted to watch these movies and then erase them when I was done, and I couldn't do it.
Legally.
I wouldn't do it, nor could I do it legally.
All right.
The DRM on there makes it impossible to do, so I had to bring the external drive with me.
So you brought it with you.
And the discs, which I didn't want to bring either of them with me, and it just pisses me off.
I agree.
Movie industry are just a bunch of idiots. I'm paying them for their movies, and here they just make my life more difficult.
Well, you know, there's a history of that. Look how what a pain iTunes is. First of all, you know, five computers, it can't exceed it. And then I had this where I rented a movie on iTunes, and it, you know, if you rent it and you start watching it on your iPod, and then it starts the time click ticking, and if you pause it, but it lasts longer than the period of time you pass by the 24 hours or whatever, then it stops, you can't watch it anymore. So I got halfway through a movie, and then it's too late, and I couldn't watch the rest. And so you think that's bad.
That's
Oy.
Insane. That's insane.
It is insane.
You give them your good money, and look what they do to you.
But I agree with you. But I like the Air. I think it's nice, and the new Air is even better. It's faster,
cheaper. That's the one I got,
and it's got better, more storage. I bought the SSD when it just first came out, and it was $1,000 for like the world's smallest hard drive.
Yeah,
and now
the one
it's
I bought
a lot less than that.
$17.99 or $16.99 with the largest drive.
It's unbelievable.
It was
That's awesome. Nice.
So in the world of venture capital funds, we have a new brethren on the street who
are compatriot
looking forward to working with potentially.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mark Andreessen now has an Andreessen Horowitz.
Yeah, I like the fact they use their own names. I think that shows, you know, you can trust them. They put their names
behind
it.
It's old school.
Yeah.
It's old school, right? Like Merrill Pickering.
They didn't name themselves Happy Go Lucky Ventures.
Happy Gilmore Ventures. Nope.
Forrest Gump Ventures.
Andreessen Horowitz. So they managed to raise $300 million in a time when old school venture firms that have been in the business for a long time can't raise, you know, $100 million. Brand new firm managed to raise $300 million.
Good for them.
What do you think of that?
I think it's fantastic. I think it shows that, you know, they're both good entrepreneurs, excellent, great, fantastic entrepreneurs.
About as good as they get.
And they've done some great investing, and they gave a story to the investors, and we share some of the same investors, which is good. And I would give them my money, but they didn't ask me for it.
We share, not only do we share the same investors, but we share the same story. Right, which is they believe if you so Mark, who I think is an incredibly good blogger, his blog's Pimarca, and he wrote about the new fund, and he described the sort of tenets of their investing, and it sounded just like the stuff we say to our investors, right? And we believe in the long term value of technology. We believe that companies are entrepreneurial driven, that He said, they like entrepreneurs who are CEOs and continue to stay on and run their businesses. They will look anywhere, but they think there's something special about Silicon Valley that results in the creation of great companies, and so they intend to invest in large part in Silicon Valley. They said that they thought there were lots of opportunities to invest early, but they also wanted the flexibility to invest late. So they actually have the capacity to invest as little as, you know, $50K in a company, but as much as $50 million, which is our story. I mean, we can invest $50K in a company. We can invest as much as $310 million. Wow.
That would be a pretty big company.
That would have to be a heck of a deal. But if you have it, we want to hear about it. And they actually talked about it. Well, it's buyouts and leverage buyouts and management buyouts and those sorts of things. And, you know, like we've continued to look at those things. So it was just very interesting to read the description, because I absolutely share their passion for technology and for company building and for teams and their enthusiasm for the market going forward. And so it's great. It's great that they raised the fund. It's great that... and it's great to have them in the market. I'll tell you, one of the things that's amazing to me, I blogged about this on VentureBlog, but so often we hear entrepreneurs that are critical of the venture industry, right? You know, you read these, oh, VCs are the bad guys, blah, blah, blah. And here are two of the great entrepreneurs of our day coming together to create a venture fund. And they're not saying, oh, we're going to, you know, screw VCs, it's broken and they're doing it the wrong way. They say, we think there's value in venture investing. We think there's value in investing early and investing late in companies that are building important technology. And so I think it's great. I'm glad that we have them in the marketplace, and I certainly hope that we have the opportunity to work with them sometime soon. That's cool.
Yeah, I've never met either of them, actually, but you know them both.
Sure, but you've met, didn't you? I mean, the other day we had a bunch of people over here for an Aardvark meeting, and Mark was here. Didn't you get a chance to meet him when he...
Nope.
All right, we'll have to make that happen. Well, he's a great guy.
Yeah, I hear excellent things about him. So
there you go.
If I was an entrepreneur,
time to meet Howard.
If I was an entrepreneur, I would go and pitch them, but I'm not.
But you should also pitch us.
Oh yeah.
So that would be good. Well, you should pitch us both.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. What else we got, Howard? What else is happening in this wacky world of technology and blah de blah?
I was, you and I were talking about brain-enhancing medications.
Oh, yes, we were.
And we were talking about performance-enhancing medications, where some athletes take a variety.
Oh, I'm glad you're talking about athletes. I was a little nervous there for a second about performance-enhancing.
No.
Because I get that email, I get 7 of those emails a day.
You just don't have a good spam filter.
Apparently not.
And I think it's kind of an interesting topic where in our society that many people perceive drugs to be okay.
Yeah.
Whether it's for, you know, to help them stay up all night to study for their tests, or to help them think more clearly because they want to, you know, work hard and do a great job, or because they want to have a faster swimming or track time, and they take medication to do that. And I think my personal opinion is that all these, you know, these chemicals are bad for you and you shouldn't be taking them.
Well, so just to give the context, I mean, I have recently had a number of conversations with Silicon Valley entrepreneurs about these brain drugs, and in particular people using off prescription medications for things like ADD as essentially speed to focus, to stay up all night and program, etc. And then there's this new drug, I guess it's not incredibly new but relatively new, called Provigil, which I recently learned was developed for pilots so that they could stay awake for long periods of time, not crash. And it doesn't affect your metabolism, your anabolic processes. It just is, you know, it's speed. And apparently there are lots of entrepreneurs in Silicon Valley who are using this stuff to stay up all night, to code, to be more focused, to need less sleep. And now their kids taking this stuff, you know, to study for their SATs or take their SATs or whatever. And it's pretty amazing. I'm sort of stunned by it, to tell you the truth.
I'm stunned because one thing we see historically is drugs are popular for something and later the side effects come out and they're really bad, like Vioxx destroys your heart, or, you know, it was just a great painkiller. It was just, anti-inflammatory, and it happened to cause a lot of heart problems for people. We're hearing last week about Vicodin and Tylenol, acetaminophen, yeah, causing liver failure. And I mean, just drugs are just basically really bad. I mean, I think, you eat foods to stay, nourished and healthy, and if you're really suffering some medical condition and you need to take drugs to get better or to tolerate the pain is one thing, but I think people taking drugs to increase their performance on, bike riding or swimming or your brain performance for coding all night and thinking that, well, I'm young, I'm strong, and well, that's not me, I'm not young and strong.
Yeah,
but
someone
thinking,
is.
the
guys were funding.
The guys who are taking these drugs, and then, what happens to them later? Then they start having problems in a few years, and maybe they have liver problems or they get, some terrible disease. I just think it's unfortunate.
So, but, the other side, I was talking with a VC friend, and we were having this very conversation. He said, well, look, I'm on a statin for my, for high cholesterol. And he said, I have a friend who's a cardiologist, and he says the single most important advancement in managing heart disease has been the statin. And the fact that it's driven down heart attacks by a huge amount. And so why is that different? Right?
Because that's a medical need that's doing something, and you are taking risks of other side effects from having those statins. We just don't know what they are. But I think when you
you're a Puritan, Howard.
I am.
I can't believe it. Do you drink?
In the use, I do. But in the use of negative language is, I was learning a couple years ago, my kid's school, some father told his kid, don't cross the street. And the kid heard cross the street and ran out in front of the car and got run over. And luckily he survived, but the 5 Series BMW rolled over him and cracked his hip bone. But whenever people say, don't do drugs, I never liked that line.
Because you always hear, do drugs.
All you hear is kids hear, do drugs, drugs, this. But, I think I'm disappointed to hear that people are taking drugs to stay up all night and work harder and this and that. I think it's terrible. But I am a Puritan, and anyway,
it's just very interesting because I hadn't heard about it until recently, and then I've heard that there are lots of people out there doing it.
So how do you feel about it as it relates to sports? I mean, it's illegal to do in most sports, yet a lot of people still do it, and therefore, if you're the guy who doesn't, you're at a disadvantage.
It's true. I stay up all night just based on eating cookies.
I just ate four.
That should be sufficient.
I just ate 4 3 Musketeers bars. That sounds
like those are mini 3 Musketeers bars. I mean,
yeah, but you know how many I ate beforehand.
No, I don't. But I mean, you have the highest metabolism of any human being I know.
Yes, that's because I take metabolism-enhancing drugs.
Right, exactly.
I like to eat. So
actually, I was talking about these drugs, these brain performance-enhancing drugs, and said, oh, actually, if you want to lose weight, you should take, whatever the ADD drug is of choice. I can't remember, because it also is an appetite suppressant. So you'll be up all night and you won't eat.
Great.
I'm like, wow, I got to get some of that. How do I get that? And the answer is you make sure that your children are diagnosed with some attention deficit disorder, and then you use their drugs.
I mean, we didn't bring this up just to, espouse our views. I think it was more that it's just shocking to hear that people who are professional and well-educated and successful are taking, brain-enhancing drugs.
Well,
kind of surprises me.
So it is surprising, but, I was reading a thing in Stanford Magazine. There's a Stanford law school professor who wrote a book about this, and he basically said, look, it's not different than any other medical advancement, and we're counting on human intellect to drive society forward, to do things like come up with alternative energy, come up with, better ways to live, etc. And why shouldn't, if we can make people better thinkers, then isn't it our obligation to do it? And shouldn't we be working on these drugs? Because in the aggregate, then they'll increase the total value of human brain power for all these other problems. So what do you say to that?
I think that professor probably has a lot of money invested in healthcare stocks.
<He's like laughs>
and drug
Genentech.
Manufacturers.
He's like a big Genentech.
Yeah, he's looking for money on the drug side.
Well, he probably got funded by them. But anyway, it's just an interesting. There you have it. That's it. It's interesting.
It's just interesting.
It's just interesting. Well, that sounds like a good way to end. I think now this is like the puritanical venture cast.
Thank you for your time today.
And so when are we going to have a chance to do this again in a couple of weeks? Because we took a little longer than our couple of weeks this time.
That's your fault. I was here and waiting when we were scheduled to do it.
What? Seriously?
No.
Okay. Come on.
I just do it when you drag me in your office. And you say, hey, Howard, it's venture guest.
Well, you're off to Munich for your Swoopo board meeting, but you'll be back.
Yes.
I'm off to my old babysitter's getting married. Got to go to her wedding, but I'll be back. So until then, we'll see if technology continues to move apace.
Goodbye.